there. Welcome back to our Tales of the Low Country podcast. I'm Hannah, and I'm joined today by my coworker Justin, our resident reptile wrestler. We're recording out of your soundstage in Bluffton, South Carolina. And I hope you'll forgive the possible noise. They're doing a little bit of work next door, so anything you hear, we'll just attribute to that. And today we're hanging out with Vanessa Llewellyn, the founder of Tabby Tales Rescue.
Out of Savannah.
Hello.
How are you today?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having us on.
Oh, not a problem. So tell us a little bit more about the life and times of the Tabby Tales Rescue. What's a regular day like in your world?
Right now we are full on into kitten season. So we have several moms with kittens in our rescue. We have young orphaned kittens in our rescue right now. So it's a little bit of chaos. But we've had a good spring. We've done a lot of great adoptions. So everyday life is kind of managing the ebb and flow of cats coming into the rescue, finding appropriate foster homes, promoting them for adoption, meeting with potential adopters, and hopefully finding forever homes for them.
That's awesome. How many kittens do you guys have right now? Do you know?
We have some younger ones that are either from babies up to about 8 weeks right now, and total count on those is right around 20. We have a couple of moms that are finishing up that nursing process, and so everybody is, with the exception of five that are about a week old right now, everybody else is scheduled to be altered within the second or third week of May, and so they'll be ready for adoption after that.
Nice.
Very good. Now, we were talking a little bit beforehand about PetSmart. You said that the cat adoption area in PetSmart is actually empty right now, but that's because your kittens aren't ready to be sold?
Yes, we have available space. We usually have four kennels in one of the stores in Savannah, and we've had a couple of adoptions over the weekend, so I have two kitties that are still there ready and waiting for their homes, and then everybody else that's kind of on the schedule is not going to be ready for the next couple of weeks. So we've reached out to our local animal services and said, hey, do you have any cats that are actually altered and ready for adoption that we can move in? So we're checking in with them so we can see about saving a few more and getting them out of the shelter.
Awesome. That's great. How long have you guys been in the Savannah area?
We actually got started last year in this time of year. We really officially launched in like June and July, but started the process of getting our nonprofit status and our rescue license in March and April. So it really started rolling with adoptions. We did a few in June of last year and got the ball rolling full throttle in July.
Okay, so we got in contact with you pretty early
mm-hmm.
on then.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yep.
Awesome.
Now, did you have something going on before your thing in Savannah?
I have been doing rescue work with another organization for 3 years prior to starting Tabby Tales.
Okay. So what was the inspiration behind it?
Behind starting Tabby Tales, we really just wanted to focus on cats. There's not another organization that is strictly focused on the adoption and medical care of cats. There are a couple of organizations in Savannah that focus on trap, neuter, and release programs, mm-hmm. which is essential. There are a lot of cats, stray cats, and cat colonies in the town, and
for sure.
So they're filling a huge need there to trap and neuter these cats and get some basic vetting done for them, make sure that they're vaccinated. But there wasn't an organization that really specifically said, okay, I am going to focus on saving cats from shelters or trying to prevent them from going into shelters. So people who need assistance, with rehoming their pets, we will work with them as well. And just felt that it was important to fill that niche in town.
And you guys work with special needs cats too, right?
We do. I can't say necessarily that we seek them out, but we're not afraid to take them in. We have had one case in particular that we rescued last year from animal control, and Savannah had a heart murmur. And, you know, a lot of animals live with heart murmurs, mm-hmm. and, you know, some are mild. This guy in particular, Tugger was his name, is his name. He's still, you know, he's still not with us in rescue, but one of our foster parents adopted him. But we took him to the specialist in Charleston. They did an MRI, or an EKG, excuse me, and he has some pretty significant heart problems, and so was definitely going to have a shortened lifespan. And foster mom went home and spoke to her significant other, and it was, you know, a matter of hours before they said, yeah, we're keeping this cat.
Aw.
Good.
So it was a good story.
Yeah, that's great. Tugger.
Yeah,
I remember posting him online and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
As far as Tails adoption stuff goes, for those of you that don't know, I handle a lot of the online postings and the gathering for each issue. And Tabby Tails has been really great about keeping me updated with who's been adopted and stuff like that, and the contact has been constant, so that's been a big help.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's a fantastic volunteer, and that is an area we have been beyond blessed with, is to have some really good solid volunteers that are consistent in their mm-hmm. efforts and dedicated to helping the
cat. It's hard to come by.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, definitely. So what would you say connects you to the animals? What draws you in about them?
Personalities. I mean, I think I would say that all of our volunteers would express that, you know, whether or not it's an animal that reminds them of, you know, a cat they had when they were a kid, or one that they currently have. They may get attached based upon the looks of an animal. They might get attached, you know, based on the personality or the way the kitty cuddles or the way the cat purrs. I am completely a sucker for those that are by themselves without litter mates, you uh-huh. know, that have been found yeah. as an orphan or yeah. those that are sick. I walked into animal services last week to, you know, specifically to take a couple of cats that were pre-planned, and they were like, oh, Vanessa's here. And here's a kitten that was just brought in by herself and, aww. You know, and she's holding her little leg up and seems to have a problem with her leg. And I'm like, okay, I don't know where I'm putting her, but I'm taking her home.
I've been down that road. So,
yeah.
I've had friends that are like, I got this gecko that I need to get rid of, or this snake. And they're like, but I can't find anybody to take it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, I shouldn't, but okay.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's been kind of the way with us, too, in the past with cats and adopting strays. And mm-hmm. yeah.
It's
yeah.
just funny because I know I'm going to have to, like, rearrange my room again to find space. And then it's like, and I got to take into consideration, like, how much I have to spend now on food and, like, everything else. And, mm-hmm. like, even then, I'm still like, yeah, sure.
It's good too. I mean, I have a really good relationship, I think, with all of our volunteers and our foster mm-hmm. parents, and they tease me a little bit. I mean, I've been called a kitten drug pusher, and you know, when I messaged this particular foster last week, and I sent her the photo of the kitten. And I didn't exactly ask if I could bring her a cat. I just said, I'm bringing you a kitten.
How can you say no to this?
And right? she didn't say no. So, and I said, she's holding her leg up. And she says, oh, can you take her right to the vet? So we were in. We were good at that point.
Like a used car salesman.
Everybody's got to have a talent.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, kittens. That just, mm-hmm. how can you refuse?
Well, you know, I don't really have an issue doing that, like, taking in reptiles and stuff like that either, because I can hold on to them for as long as I need to, and mm-hmm. then I can work on finding them a new home mm-hmm. if I want. You know, mm-hmm. it's, you know,
right.
short-term or long-term, whatever.
Right.
You know, I'm flexible.
Well, and that's the beauty of, you know, being in a foster situation is that the kitty is going into a home.
Yeah.
You know, having a facility would be fantastic. For your healthy, ready to adopt cats. But for those who need some extra special care, it's nice to have them in a home. You're able to check on them on a regular basis. You know, especially little ones that don't have litter mates need some socialization. So in a family environment, they get to meet and mingle with the other cats. Mm-hmm. Sometimes the foster parents have dogs. Sometimes they have kids. So it's really good exposure for the cat to learn how to behave with, you know, with other species.
Yeah.
And then when someone comes to adopt them, you can say, they've been with kids, they've been with other cats, mm-hmm. they've been with dogs, we've taken them here, we've taken them there, they travel well. So we're really able to make sure that the placement is good on adoption.
Yeah.
Because we know their personality so mm-hmm. well.
And that was something you touched on when we talked a few weeks ago, was like how much you guys make sure that the right animal goes to like the right family. Because you know, mm-hmm. you talked about really skittish cats probably don't do well with homes with small kids.
Correct.
Right. You know, things yeah. like that. You know, you got to really make sure it's a match.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and occasionally it's not. I mean, most of the time we do the best job that we can on the front end, trying to make sure it's a good fit.
Mm-hmm.
And once in a blue moon, we'll get a call and we'll say that someone will say this is just not working out.
Yeah.
You know, this is not, this cat has too much energy, or this cat is, you know, somebody has gotten sick in the family and they, you know, can't have the cat
yeah.
anymore. And so we always have an open door to take them back if we have to.
And that's good.
So.
Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of like the cat we had when I was growing up. Her name was Sassy, but she was anything but sassy.
Mm-hmm.
She was actually quite a scaredy cat. And so when she was living with us, you know, my sister and I were very small at the time, and she did not like kids. She was afraid mm-hmm. of everybody, everything. She would hide under the furniture, and you'd hardly ever see her. She'd come out maybe at night to eat and whatnot. But so when we moved, you know, we were moving away from my grandmother, and she was going to be by herself. And so my parents came to us and they're like, well, what would you think about giving Sassy to Grandma? And we're like, well, you know, we hardly ever saw her. So,
mm-hmm.
it wasn't, I mean, we were going to be sad, but it wasn't that big a deal to us. And so, you know, they gave the cat to my grandmother, and man, that cat, she turned like a new leaf.
Mm-hmm.
Once your kids were out of the picture,
yeah,
huh?
Exactly. She became a lap cat. She really mm-hmm. took to my grandma, and they did all kinds of stuff together. Because, you know, my grandma, she'd go over and sit in her chair and quilt, or
mm-hmm.
She'd just go about her day and do her things, and the cat was totally happy and content.
Right.
So, yeah, you're right. The personality doesn't always fit the first family
mm-hmm.
it comes across.
And that's why I can't really decide if I'm, like, a dog person or a cat person. Like, I like both, but I'll probably lean more towards cats in general just because of their self-sufficiency. Like,
yeah.
You know, they're very independent, and I like that.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, that's coming from keeping snakes and stuff that don't care if you're alive or dead. But, like,
see, that's why I don't understand why you keep snakes, because it's like, they just, I mean, how can you tell if they like you?
They don't bite you.
Oh, that's good. That's good.
They usually make it pretty well known when they don't want to be played with. But, I mean, fortunately, none of mine are really like that. But, I mean, it's just nice. Like, I've always kind of just liked cats more just because of the fact that, you know, if they want your attention, they'll come and find you.
Mm-hmm.
If they
yeah.
want anything, they'll come and find you. And then, for the most part, they're just kind of doing their own thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So. No, that's definitely why I like cats. And my cat now, though, he is a sweetheart. And but he's very self-sufficient and everything, but when he wants attention, he'll come find me, and when I want his attention, I'll go find him.
Mm-hmm.
And we have this little relationship going on here.
Yeah.
But I have had many issues with cats and snake tanks, and because you know how they're anything small and moving, they
uh-huh.
have to investigate. And
mm-hmm.
so there was one night in particular when we were living in Virginia, and I was a kid. I must have been like, I don't know, 12. And one of the cats got in my room. I usually kept my door closed just so they, because they'd always jump on top of the tanks and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And one night they knocked over one of them, and I had like four small, I think they were corn snakes, like scatter.
Great.
So I was like, awesome. And the tank fell on my foot because I was trying to pull the cat off, and then his the claws got into it, and he like lifted it, It was a disaster, and I was freaking out.
It sounds like a disaster.
It sounds like it would make a really good cartoon.
I was freaking out.
I'm sure your parents were excited about snakes running around the house, too.
I was so used to it. They were, like, awesome. They've been living with that since I was like 6 or 7.
Justin, the snakes are growing out again.
Guy could talk for like hours about how many times we've had snakes get loose in the house, in the neighbor's house. It happens. It
sounds like an adventure. Yeah. So Vanessa, you have 6 cats indoors right now, right?
Correct. Yes.
Yeah, 6 indoor cats, a dog, and an outdoor cat.
Yeah, I do. Yes.
Awesome. So those are those all yours or those foster cats?
They are all mine.
Nice.
Yeah, it was a slow accumulation, but
it always is.
When I started in rescue, I had lost my dog that was kind of like my single person companion.
Mm-hmm.
And I had gotten married. I think my husband and I were married maybe 4 or 5 years when the dog passed, and I really decided that I wanted to do something with animals, but wasn't ready to have another permanent animal in the house. And, yeah. We had another dog at the time. And then I had 2 cats. And so I started fostering and started volunteering at the animal services shelter and started working with some other girls and another little rescue. And it's really how I kind of got into things. And, you know, in a few months' time was, you know, in over my head, neck deep, fosters coming and going. And my very first litter of kittens that I bottle fed were probably about 3 days old when I brought them home. And I had no idea what I was doing. You know, the girl at this shelter said, every 2 hours you have to feed them. Every 2 hours. Okay, that means midnight, 2 a.m., 4 a.m., 6 a.m. <Wow. laughs>
It's like an actual baby.
And I had to go to work during the day. So my husband was taking the day shift, mm-hmm. and I was getting up at night. And 2 of them passed. One of them got sick and just got sick very quickly, like before I realized what the signs were of a little kitten being sick. The second one started to show the same signs. We got him into the vet, but he was really so small that we just weren't able to save him.
Mm-hmm.
The third one was not sick, but we went ahead and put her, I think, on antibiotics, and we just threw everything we had into this kitten. And so once she started to reach an age where we were talking about putting her up for adoption, it was pretty apparent she was never going to leave our house.
Mm-hmm.
She is rotten. And I highly recommend that nobody ever have a single kitten. That you always get a kitten in pairs, so they can play with each other, mm-hmm. and they can learn proper manners. Because older cats didn't really engage with her, and she still does not know proper manners.
Yeah. My dad got a pair of barn cats last year together, and mm-hmm. they're like best friends. Mm-hmm. They're always running around and chasing mm-hmm. each other around the yard and stuff. It's hilarious.
Yeah. But you know, I mean, so she's almost 4. She'll be 4 years old this year in September. You know, I think you find a lot of the folks that have fostered for us at some point have decided to keep one of their fosters.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's just, you know, hey, this cat doesn't have a great personality, or she's terribly shy. She's never really going to, you know, and not never. I mean, there's a home for everybody, but you know, once you've had her in your house for 3, 4, 5 months, and there hasn't been a family that's come along that's been a good fit,
mm-hmm.
foster parents are just like, yeah, we're keeping this one. And sometimes it's a medical issue, you know, like Tugger's issue. You know, she knew once we had a full diagnosis there, she says, we're done trying. We're going to keep this cat and give this cat the best life we can possibly mm-hmm. give him for the time that he's here. We've all accumulated additional pets as we rescue.
Somehow magically happens. I have to explain to my girlfriend all the time. Like, I couldn't say no. It just showed up.
I
don't have control over these
mm-hmm.
things. Does Tabby Tails do anything with barn cats?
We don't. We have tried to reach out to several areas, you know, several barns and farms
mm-hmm.
Around Savannah, but have kind of gotten the same response from everybody that they already have enough cats.
Yeah.
I know in Beaufort County and surrounding areas, that's been a pretty good program, but we have not been able to get that launched at this point.
Okay. So now if someone were looking to relocate some feral cats, what would you tell them? Would you take those in, or would you tell them something else?
Is relocation even an option?
Good point.
Typically not with ferals, but that is really not my area of expertise. Mm-hmm. There are a couple of organizations specifically in Savannah that work with ferals.
Mm-hmm.
By and large, what I have read and what they have told me is that there's essentially a vacuum effect. So if you are, feeding five or six cats a small colony outside mm-hmm. of your building here, and you decide you're relocating them to a barn, it will be a matter of time before more cats will move into this area.
Uh-huh.
That's what I've heard
I
as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was interesting. We had a case just come up where someone reached out to our magazine, actually, about, they said that they had about 25 ferals that they knew of somewhere in the Savannah area that they were trying to see about relocating.
Mm-hmm.
But I had, when I had met with the animal control people earlier when I was researching for the article, that was something that they had mentioned was mm-hmm. the vacuum effect, that mm-hmm. if you move a colony out, a new colony will start there.
Correct. Yes.
So,
And unfortunately, either people don't know that there are resources available to help them rehome pets, or there are just people who don't care. And animals are dumped all the time. I mean, totally domesticated cats are dumped into feral colonies. And some of them get beat up.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them get pushed out.
Because there's already an established hierarchy.
And I was completely unaware that it was that tribal or gang-like until Hannah's article in the second issue of Tales came out. I mm-hmm. had no idea that it was that mm-hmm. socially structured.
Right.
So I thought that was pretty interesting.
Yeah, and if there is a feeder or a colony manager who is able to contact us and say, hey, listen, this is totally domesticated cat that was dumped, or a kitten. We had a kitten several months ago that was dumped in a feral colony. We can work with animal services, make sure that it's not somebody's owned pet that has escaped. And as long as not claimed by an owner, we can go ahead and take that animal mm-hmm. into rescue and find it home.
Yeah. Yeah. So rather than people dumping into feral cat colonies, it would be best to take the animal to a shelter. Because, let's see, in Savannah, do they have kill shelters in Savannah, or are they're going more towards the no-kill?
There is not, to my knowledge, a 100% no-kill shelter. Animal services... I think that's everybody's goal, obviously.
Oh, definitely.
In an ideal world,
But, Humane Society will take owner-surrendered pets, and that is that would be my first recommendation for someone who is in that situation mm-hmm. where they need to rehome their pet. They're established. They've been in Savannah for a very long time. They do a good job of finding homes. And people know that they're there. So they're constantly... people are just there to visit and see what they have and what's new, and if they connect with an animal, then adopt. So I do direct people there a lot because they have a facility and because their movement is so quick mm-hmm. for adoptions. One of the disadvantages, I think, of being in a smaller foster-based rescue is that there's only so many spaces in a foster home. And...
only so many people willing to do it.
Only so many people willing to do it. And I can't say, hey, can you take in five extra cats on top of your 12, please?
I know you're in a two-bedroom apartment, but
right,
that extra room that you're not using.
Your spouse has left. Your kids have moved out. But, you can take a few more cats.
You're turning into the crazy cat lady.
but there are definitely options. I mean, even the animal services, which is their job and mission is to pick up the strays, and the Humane Society and rescues is mm-hmm. to help with owner surrenders or rehomes, and then upon availability pull from the animal services shelter. But there are options.
Yeah.
There are definitely options.
And when we had Palmetto Animal League, we had Amy from Palmetto Animal League on last month.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And that was the one thing that I told her. It just baffles me that, like, shelters and stuff can even keep up, because it seems like they get so many animals. Like, how do you even, like, it almost seems like it's by a stroke of luck that you have people who come in and actually, like, you know, you have that many people who want to come in and adopt. So it's just kind of like, I can't wrap my head around how chaotic it must get sometimes.
It can get a little overwhelming. You know, the upside, I think, for some folks who like cats and enjoy cats is that it's easier to keep two or three cats than it is to keep two or three dogs.
Yeah.
True.
And I, obviously, I told you guys, I had a dog, and that's how I got started in rescue. I still have a dog. I adore her. She is kind of like a 40-pound cat. but I don't want another dog.
Yeah.
I just don't. And she has play dates. She has my mother actually adopted her litter mate, her sister. So my mom has two dogs, and they will come over and they'll play and they run around the yard and they have a great time together. But I do not want the responsibility of an extra being that I have to walk and take care of. And so a lot of times when you're, you know, when folks are thinking, well, do I want a dog? Do I want a cat? What's my lifestyle like?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have the time to exercise the dog and keep them mentally stimulated? And cats need mental stimulation too. But, you know, when we're chatting with people about what they want, we ask those lifestyle questions. Mm-hmm. You know, what is this going to be like? What's your everyday life, your everyday routine like? And how will this pet fit in?
Yeah. Yeah, it was funny when you were saying about how cats need mental stimulation. The only thing, I mean, we're very chill at my house, and I'm afraid probably the only mental stimulation my cat gets is when he watches Korean dramas with my mother in the afternoon. So he's grown very fond of Korean dramas.
That's funny. Yeah, well, windows for them to look out is good. Rearranging like how you feed them sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
The one kitten I was telling you that we had bottle fed and ended up keeping, she is a smart, smart cat. And she will wake up out of a dead sleep if I open the drawer in the bathroom that has my hair bands in it. And she flies into the bathroom. She gets up on the counter, and she is desperate to get my hair bands or clips out and knock them all over the floor.
So she likes playing with them.
Mm-hmm. She does.
That is funny. Yeah, we had a cat that did something similar. It wasn't with hair bands, but she loved ice cream. And so anytime we would get the ice cream out and we would always use the same glass bowls and the same spoon, mm-hmm. and they would just make this very distinct, like, tinking noise. And so anytime she heard that tinking noise, mm-hmm. she knew it was ice cream time. And so it didn't matter where she was in the house, she would come, like, flying down mm-hmm. the stairs and come, and she'd be sitting there, like, waiting for her ice cream.
Mm-hmm. They're smart. They are definitely smart.
Yeah. Yeah.
So... One of my girls, if I moved her food around or did anything unusual for her, she would probably starve. I mean, she is as sweet as can be, but she is not the sharpest tool. And then Shasta is definitely my smart one that needs some more stimulation. So
oh, that's great.
They can get into trouble if they are not appropriately mentally and physically stimulated, so it's good to have toys and playtime.
Yeah, we had the one cat I was telling you about that liked the ice cream. We had her at the same time. We had another cat who, she sounds a lot like the cat you were describing, is very sweet, but not the sharpest tool in the shed.
Mm-hmm.
And we would put the very sweet cat. And the cat we have now, we would lock them up in the laundry room at night because that was their bedtime routine. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when it was like 9 o'clock, they would start heading in there. And so we'd just shut them in. We tried shutting the other cat we had, the ice cream loving cat. We tried shutting her in there too, but she would like climb the walls. Mm-hmm. She could not stand to be locked up. And she was a stray that we adopted off the street. And so we'd let her roam the house at night, and the other two would stay in the laundry room. But it was funny. She had this, I don't know if she was going blind or what, but towards the end of her life, anytime we would open the laundry door in the morning to let her out, she would immediately like make a beeline for the kitchen chair and bang her head against it and then walk off, and she was fine.
Oh.
But it was every morning she would bang her head. So
they
I don't
have
know
routines.
Yeah, so I don't know if that was her wake up routine or
that's funny.
Oh, that's yeah. She was something else. The questionnaire that you filled out ahead of time, you had mentioned that you don't like animals that chase you, and you had mentioned you had been chased before by a ferret and a chicken. Would you care to elaborate on that?
I was in college, and we were in a suite, so there was like a big main living room, and five bedrooms, I think, off that, and then like a central bathroom for everybody to share.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the girls living next to me had a ferret, and I really had just gotten out of the shower and hear this scratching, and ferret was underneath the bathroom sink.
What?
So I managed to get from the bathroom to my dorm room, to my actual room. But ferret chased me, like literally chased me into the bedroom and then chased me around the living space. And so, and this is before everybody had cell phones. So I'm using like the phone in the suite to call people because it's the middle of class time. Like everybody is gone. I was the only person that was there.
Yeah.
And, I managed to locate a friend that was on the floor above us, and she came down to help me corral she didn't help me corral. She corralled the ferret, and I got down off the table. And so, yeah, I don't do ferrets.
Chased by a chicken before, too. We had this little bantam way back when, a couple of years ago, little tiny guys.
Mm-hmm.
He's like all 10 inches tall.
Mm-hmm.
Anytime you'd walk in the backyard, you'd see him could just come screaming around the corner, and I always just went the other way.
Not much into chickens either.
I don't mind them, but the bantams for some reason are like vicious little killing machines.
I'm just picturing this like tiny little screaming chicken.
I think I tried to fight it off with like a trash can lid and some sort of like brush that we had. And it didn't work.
Oh, but honestly, to be chased by a ferret, I know that they're small, but that's still kind of terrifying.
They will still scratch and bite.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, that's like the making of a horror story right there, and being chased by a ferret, and like you can't get away.
I've never kept them, but my dad had one as a kid, and he said they smelled really bad.
You know, we have
I can see him being
foster
messy.
That has a ferret, and apparently he's super cool, and I'm sure that she keeps things very clean.
Mm-hmm.
But she can have him. Yeah. She really does love him, and I mean, you know, I guess he's got a great personality. I mean, several of our other volunteers have met him, and but that's good for her. I'm good with cats and the dogs, and I'm not really inviting a ferret into the house.
Understandable. So, animals, like, have they always been a love of your life? Is this an area you always wanted to work in, or did this desire come about later in life?
I've always had some kind of animal, from being a little kid to where I had a couple of turtles and, you know, kept an aquarium with turtles. And I think I was 7 or 8 years old, so whatever little allowance I got for taking out the trash and doing the dishes helped me buy turtle food and
nice
hamsters when I was a kid. First cat was when I was 13, and so really, you know, kind of developed a love of, at that point, for, you know, domestic companion that would sleep with you and play with you and interact. When I was in college, just post-college, I had a cat that had some personality quirks. And it was at that point that I took him to the vet and said, hey, this cat is kind of over-the-top aggressive with me. And she said, he needs a playmate. I said, I don't really want another cat. Yeah. I don't want to be the single girl with two cats. So I'm interested in a dog. She said the dog would be great. I got a dog. The dog and the cat didn't get along.
Oh, no.
The dog was fine. Cat was not interested. Oh. And things actually worked out. We had a family friend who had just had to put one of her cats to sleep that was older and ill. And so she took my kitty, who lived a long and wonderful life as a big 17-pound cat. And I kept my dog, and so really learned a totally different kind of relationship mm-hmm. in having a dog. But didn't really expect to be doing rescue work or animal work as a main, this is what I do 40 hours a week.
Yeah.
My background is actually in exercise and sports medicine and personal training and fitness.
Oh, okay.
And just kind of have as life has progressed, explored different avenues, gotten into different things. I needed a little bit of a break. I was doing some mobile personal training. I had gotten a license as a massage therapist, but I was traveling a lot doing the work. I was doing a lot of in-home personal training and,
oh yeah. Okay.
Needed a career change, but I just really said I need to take a break from this and started doing volunteer work that has led me to where I am today doing, doing rescue work full time.
Yeah.
Cool. So.
Yeah, it's neat how life throws curveballs, but sometimes, even though they're unexpected, they're not necessarily unpleasant. Just like, you went to school for health and fitness and then ended up doing rescue work. I mean, it's a definite turn, but I'm sure you don't regret it at all.
No, I don't. I mean, it's amazingly rewarding. There are definitely days that you feel overwhelmed and sad and sometimes things happen that you don't anticipate and you have your ups and downs, you get attached, things don't work out. But in general, each and every day I have the ability to get up and to make a difference. And it's not just, hey, I'm making a difference in an animal's life, but that animal then moves on to make a difference in their adopter's life.
Mm-hmm.
Hear stories down the road. We actually have a little private group. Since we've started Tabby Tales, we've started a private Facebook page for our adopters. And some people don't Facebook, so we'll just email and check in with them or call and check in with them periodically. But, we get these stories of my daughter loves this cat. They sleep together. She's so happy. And they send us photos.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so you realize that you're just, yes, you're saving an animal and you're doing a fantastic thing by saving this little tiny life that most people don't pay a bit of attention to. But you're changing people's lives mm-hmm. when you pair them together and they establish a bond and develop a love of animals themselves.
Yeah.
I always look at it from the standpoint of, like, there's no use in complaining about it because there's someone somewhere who would probably kill to be doing what I get to do.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, I'm not going to be that guy.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good way of looking at it. And it's that's something I guess I'd never really thought about with animal rescue work. You're not just helping out the animal. You're helping the person who eventually adopts the animal or fosters the animal. You can be life-changing to them as well. 'Cause I've seen and heard and read countless stories of just people who, their lives have done a total 180 just from an animal.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, it's incredible.
Yes, it is.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So if you happen to win the lottery tomorrow, what would you do with the money? Would you stay in rescue work or would you just take a vacay?
There's no doubt I would stay in rescue. Absolutely no doubt I would stay in rescue. I do think that a nice vacation would probably be in order.
Totally understandable.
We don't get away often. I think that my husband would be much appreciative of a nice vacation without any animals to take care of. But we would definitely continue with rescue work. There's just too much to do.
Yeah. Yeah. So besides vacation, what would you end up doing with the money, you think?
I think we would probably look at, facility options. For adoption centers, or even, there are a lot of things that I think about, kind of sanctuary setups, for cats that maybe have illnesses that make them substantially less likely to be adopted, or hospice care situations. Mm-hmm. We see stuff and I don't see it a lot, but I see it enough that I know it's a need is for people who are either facing a homelessness situation or a domestic abuse situation where they want to leave, but they are afraid of leaving behind their pets.
Yeah. I've never thought about that. So
those are kind of things that, that float through your mind of, how would I go about doing this? What kind of money would be involved here? How do I keep that a secret? Do I need to keep that a secret?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So those are kind of long-term things that maybe someday could be in the works if the cards fall into the right, mm-hmm. into the right place there.
Yeah.
For us to do in the future.
Yeah, definitely. So in the here and now though, how can people help out your organization?
People can help out, either through volunteering, if you're in Savannah and want to be hands-on with the cats. We need help at our adoption events. We need help at the PetSmart store that we utilize. We have volunteers that go in and visit the cats every day to make sure that they're healthy, that everything is going okay, and they get some time out of the kennel, mm-hmm. so they get to play with a person. And if they're well socialized, they can play with the other cats that are there. Mm-hmm. So we have volunteers that do that. Sometimes it's behind the scenes things like marketing and Facebook and Instagram and social media stuff and doing flyers for some of our cats. We have a couple of girls who take photos for us, but I keep them busy, mm-hmm. especially as we're approaching. We're in the midst here of our kitten season in May.
I'm sure.
I'm saying, can you please go take pictures of like 20 cats in 5 different locations? So photography is great. Just behind the scenes paperwork is good. And there's always donating. Vet bills take up 90% really of our resources.
I believe it.
Just basic vetting for a cat. It can be anywhere from, $100 to $150, and that is really basic stuff for a healthy cat that doesn't have any issues to worry about. And our adoption fees certainly don't cover that.
Yeah.
They just don't. So financial support is definitely a way for people to help as well.
Excellent. Well, I think that's all the time we have for today, but thank you so much for joining us, Vanessa.
Thank you.
And it was a pleasure talking with you, and I hope you'll join us next time for our next podcast. This is Hannah and Justin signing out for Taylor. See you next week.